So good evening all, and nice to have the opportunity to learn with everybody who's joining us this evening. Tonight's topic is the halachic implications of OCD. I certainly don't have a professional knowledge of obsessive compulsive disorder, though I have done a certain amount of reading about the subject. And very possibly other people on the call this evening know more about it than I do. But I want to look at certain aspects of it from a halachic and religious perspective. The first page that I've given you is actually taken from the NHS website, which explains to us what OCD is. It tells us that it's a mental health condition where a person has obsessive thoughts and compulsive behaviours. It can affect men, women and children, etc., etc. What are the symptoms? So frequent obsessive thoughts and compulsive behaviours. And an obsession is an unwanted and unpleasant thought, image or urge that repeatedly enters your mind, causing feelings of anxiety, disgust or unease. And a compulsion is a repetitive behaviour or mental act that you feel you need to do to temporarily relieve the unpleasant feelings brought on by the obsessive thought. For example, someone with an obsessive fear of being burgled may feel they need to check all the windows and doors are locked several times before they can leave their house. Women can sometimes have OCD during pregnancy or after their baby's born. Obsessions may include worrying about harming the baby or not sterilising feeding bottles properly. And compulsions could be things such as repeatedly checking the baby is breathing. So this can be areas which, you know, can affect anybody in any area of their life. A number of studies have suggested that a characteristic of OCD is that it manifests itself in areas of life that are particularly important to the sufferer. They don't manifest themselves in areas that aren't particularly important to the sufferer. So if a person's got no interest whatsoever in football, then they're not going to be constantly checking the football scores to make sure that you know, their team hasn't gone down in the league. However, if you know, the security of their home is important to them, so therefore if they've got OCD, then they might well spend a lot of time every night checking all the windows, or you know, every time they've gone out coming back to check the door is locked, and things like that. Now, an area where, sorry, all these areas, these examples given here in the NHS document, obviously don't have any impact on a halakhic perspective. OCD is like any other mental health condition, and we would advise people to take steps to relieve themselves of that condition and to seek appropriate treatment. And there's not usually any clash between halakha and the OCD treatment. However, sometimes OCD can have a reference to the religious life of a person, especially bearing in mind that OCD attaches itself to the most important aspects of a person's life. So, for example, a person who's suffering from OCD might, say, at Pesach time, you know, become obsessive about cleaning for chametz. What's their obsessive thought? They're worried about something, you know, which is an unpleasant thought. It's an unpleasant thought of perhaps there being chametz in their home over Pesach. And that worries them because that chametz is, you know, as we know, on Pesach is public enemy number one. And that person is worried that public enemy number one is in their home. Or that, you know, because it's in their home, that they're now breaking the halakha, and that Hashem is going to be angry with them. It can manifest itself in other ways as well. For example, If a person, you know, might be worried that, you know, they're still saying Mashiv Haruach Umorit HaGeshem in their Amidah. So every time they say the Amidah, they're worried, you know, they get to the end and, oh, did I say Mashiv Haruach? Maybe I haven't said the Amidah properly. And they'll go back and say the Amidah again. And then they get to the end again and they're still not sure. Did they say they can't remember? And they'll go back and say it yet a third time, etc., etc., things like that. Very common area of OCD manifesting itself in a religious context is with regard to personal hygiene. Because personal hygiene is, in any event, something which tends to affect OCD sufferers. And halakha puts a lot of importance on personal hygiene in a variety of areas. For example, netilat yadayim. So you have to make sure the water gets to all parts of your hand and that there's no chatzitza on your hand and things like that. So a person suffering from OCD, it could take them a very long time to do netilat yadayim. Similarly, there's a prohibition against davening if one hasn't wiped oneself properly after going to the bathroom. So a person with OCD can become obsessive about wiping themselves properly after using the bathroom out of a fear that they're not clean enough to be able to daven. Or another area which is certainly discussed in these studies, is with regards to women and Tarat HaMishpacha, the various bedikot that need to be done. And there can be an obsessive sense of, you know, checking and doing extra bedikot which aren't required by halakha, or when going to the mikveh to make sure that there's no chatzitza, no impediment to the tevila, and things like that. So religion is a fertile ground for those with OCD. And in actual fact, there's a certain amount of discussion as to whether or not people with OCD are attracted to religion, or perhaps religion triggers OCD behaviour in people who've got those tendencies, but they're latent. Meaning a person who is prone to OCD, and in normal circumstances it might not cause them too much trouble. Once they get into a structure which is very regimented and is very focused on details, so then that can feed into their disorder in this regard. So certainly religion is an area where OCD can very much manifest itself. Now, what treatment is available for people with OCD? So the document here tells us that the main treatments are either physiological therapy, usually CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which helps you face your fears and obsessive thoughts without putting them right through compulsions, or using various antidepressant medicines. Now, how does CBT work? CBT works by basically getting you to confront the issues and, you know, to deal with them and to learn to ignore them and push them to one side. So, for example, the way that CBT therapy, you know, might work is if a person's got, you know, obsession about locking their house every night, and it takes them half an hour before they go to bed, you know, to go round every window and door and make sure that it's properly closed. And then once they're in bed, they get out of bed again because they're worried about a window that they might have left open. And that happens to them, you know, several times, you know, every evening. So the way of dealing with it would be that, you know, imposing a strict regime on the sufferer, that they're not allowed to do that. That, you know, they can check all the doors once and then they have to stay in bed. And, you know, once they're in bed, they have to stay there. They can't get up and go and check the doors. And even though there's a slight risk that maybe, you know, maybe they've left the door open or a window open or something like that, they have to learn to overcome these fears. So that's all fine as far as the doors and windows on your house are concerned. But when it comes to religion, it's a bit more problematic, because to say to a person, listen, you know, don't repeat the Amida, even if you're, you know, pretty sure that, that you did say Mashiv HaRuach when you weren't supposed to say Mashiv HaRuach. You've got to deal with the situation, and you've got to not let it, dominate your life, and don't repeat the Amida, even if you've got a Safek. Even though the Halakha tells us that when a person's got a Safek, they have to repeat the Amida. That's a very common manifestation of OCD in a religious context, is with people saying brachot or davening, that they're worried they haven't said the words correctly. So it could take a person with OCD a very long time to say Shema, because they're worried that each word, they haven't said it correctly. And if you haven't said the words of Shema correctly, then you haven't been Yotze. So an OCD therapist, putting somebody through CBT, will tell them, but even if you think that's the case, you mustn't repeat Shema. You've got to break that cycle of compulsively and repetitively saying Shema and again and again and again. And of course, this is going to have questions from a religious perspective. First of all, sometimes it's difficult to identify whether something really is OCD, in terms of if you see a person, you know, during the course of davening, checking that their tefillin is in the right place. Well, you know, isn't that good, you know, in terms of you're supposed to be mamash mesh b'tefillin, you're supposed to touch your tefillin regularly during tefillah to make sure that you're thinking about them, and you're supposed to make sure that they're in the right place on your head. So if a person checks, you know, most people maybe check once during davening or maybe not at all. If a person checks 10 times during davening, does that mean that they're suffering from OCD? Or does it mean that they're just being makpid on the halakha? That if I wash my hands from the tilak yadayim, chick-chack, I'm done. Is that the normal way? Or does it that sort of suggest that, well, maybe I'm not being as careful as I ought to be? The next person takes 3 minutes over the tilak yadayim. Are they displaying symptoms of OCD, or are they just being makpid on what the halakha wants us to be makpid about? So this is a, you know, that's a starting point, you know, question which needs to be, you know, borne in mind, that very often OCD behavior can be overlooked in a religious context because it can be mistaken for punctiliousness in halakha. And we've got an article here that was written by Nathan Jeffy. It was published a few years back in the Jewish Chronicle, where it you know, flags up the fact that OCD can be triggered by our religious rituals. If you look in the third paragraph, he asks, does following a religious system full of obligations, practices and rituals push people towards OCD? There's a whole body of research and the general consensus is no, says Stephen Friedman, an American psychiatrist with expertise in OCD and observant jury, head of the Phobia and Anxiety Disorder Clinic at SUNY, Downstate Medical Center in New York. Friedman says, it's just that OCD tends to attack what is most important to people. So while for many people OCD can translate into hygiene concerns, for observant Jews it's likely to manifest itself in religious matters. Could the milky drink actually be in a milky cup? Has a particular ritual been performed correctly, etc., etc.? And you can read through that that article by yourself. But certainly what we've got is a perhaps a particular awareness of OCD in the religious community, because we have a system that allows people with those tendencies to become obsessive. And the big question is, how should they be addressed, particularly when the question comes up with regard to mitzvot and the chance that either not doing a positive mitzvah or sometimes, you know, transgressing a negative mitzvah. For example, a person who's got, who's obsessive about kashrut in their home. So, you know, we all have to be careful about kashrut. Ashrei Adam Mefachei Tamid, Tehillim says that the person is always nervous, always a bit frightened That's good. That's positive. And, you know, we shouldn't be the type of person who, something maybe happened in the kitchen. Maybe it did. Maybe it didn't. It's a suffix. Shrug our shoulders and go on. But there comes a point where it's it's interfering with normal life. And I would say that that's a good marker, because I believe that the Torah was given to normal people. I know that might sound like a bit of a chiddush to some people. Maybe it's reactionary, revolutionary to say that. But the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, expects normal people to be able to observe the rules of the Torah. And therefore, if you can't observe them in the context of a normal life, if it's going to take you, half an hour to wash your hands or something like that, or 3 hours, 4 hours to prepare for the mikveh, or something of that nature, that doesn't fit into a normal life, whatever normal is. And of course, one person's normality is the next person's madness. But nevertheless, whatever's normal, it should be able to fit into that. So whatever goes out of the beyond the spectrum of what falls into normal behaviour, then could be OCD. And so you've got a person that they've always got shilas in the kitchen, and you tell them once they've dealt, every time they're cooking, they can have one shila, and anything else they have to ignore. Now there's a chance that in actual fact, they really did stir the chicken soup with the milky ladle, and that now they've traced up their ladle. Okay, am I allowed, either as a therapist or a rabbi, whoever's advising them, can we advise such a person that, no, you're not allowed to ask, answer any more shaylos? It might be that a therapist would tell this, would tell a patient that you could only ask one shayla about kashrus a day, okay? Because anything more than that is showing an obsessive tendency. And the therapist might, with the permission of the patient, contact me and say to me, Rabbi, if so-and-so contacts you, WhatsApps you a shayla about kashrut, please only answer one shayla a day. Okay? And I answer a shayla from them in the morning, and they text me about something in the afternoon, and it's a kashrus shayla, and it really seems to me like maybe they've got a mess up in their kitchen. Am I allowed, as a rabbi, to turn them away and say, I'm not answering your shayla? Maybe they're going to be eating treif. Am I allowed to do that? Or the person who it takes them half an hour to say Shema because they're not sure if they've said each word properly. Am I allowed to tell them, if guided by their therapist, that, Shema should not take you more than 5 minutes, and you're not allowed, you've got to keep it down to 5 minutes, or, you're not allowed to repeat the Amidah. You say the Amidah and that's it. You're not allowed to repeat it. Okay? They've got to show, maybe they weren't Yotzei, maybe they didn't say Yalev Yav, or maybe they didn't say Mashiv Haruach, whatever it is. Am I allowed to put them through a regime which is perhaps going to stop them doing mitzvot in order to deal with their OCD challenges? So that's really the questions that we're asking. And I know it's taken a long time to give the background. It's important, I think, to understand the background in order to understand the responses and the answers. So it's interesting that there isn't a lot of discussion of this in the halachic literature. There is a letter from the Stipler Gaon, written, I think, in the 1970s, something like that. Rav Osher Weiss quotes it. Other than that, Rav Osher Weiss has a tshuva on the subject, which we're going to look at. And there have been a couple of articles written about it. Why isn't there so much discussion about it from a halachic perspective? I can only surmise that perhaps it's perceived as not being as debilitating as some other mental health conditions, though I'm sure for a person with severe OCD, it is every bit as debilitating as other mental health conditions. It's also possible that it's been perhaps traditionally difficult for some of the poskim to recognise OCD as really being OCD rather than a hakpada on mitzvot. In terms of if it doesn't come together with everything else, so if the person isn't double-checking their car 10 times that they've locked it every time they get out of it and isn't spending half an hour closing the windows at night to make sure that, that the house is secure, so then, I think it's possible not to recognise it as OCD and to think that a person is actually being very pious. And, when I see a person being more careful over Nitilat Yadayim than I am, I often feel like, I wish I was that careful about Nitilat Yadayim. And perhaps it's, difficult to delineate between what is, reasonable hakpada and, genuine, religious piety, and what is OCD on the other hand. So one of the articles that's been written on the subject is by Rabbi David Lichtenstein in his Headlines volume. I know a lot of people are familiar with the Headlines series. And he has an article in the second volume. And I'm going to start actually in the middle of this this volume, where he talks about, in actual fact, the reasons to allow, if necessary, an OCD sufferer even to transgress an issur, even to transgress something which is prohibited. Because he says, we'll read it through for those who haven't got access to the Makorot. Another basis for suspending mitzvah observance. So he's talking particularly about mitzvah observance here, but we'll see. In the case of an OCD patient, is the concern of suicide. Studies have shown that as many as 25% of OCD patients become suicidal due to the unbearable hardship the disorder causes. That's very significant. A well-established halachic principle mandates violating any Torah law that is necessary to save a life, even if the statistical probability of death is low. As long as there is a risk, the concern to save a life overrides any Torah law. Seemingly, then, the risk of suicide should suffice to allow the patient to suspend mitzvah observance as necessary for effective treatment. So this is quite a radical statement that he's making, but I certainly think that it has a lot of halachic cogency. The only thing that I would, flag up as a question is whether that can be taken as a blanket rule, or perhaps needs to be assessed on a case-by-case basis. I would suspect that it needs to be assessed on a case-by-case basis, and depending on the severity of the disorder, this may be more or less relevant, meaning that if a person is really experiencing severe disruption to their life, then the chances of being suicidal are much greater than if a person realizes that their behavior is OCD, realize that it's perhaps causing them problems in social contexts and the work context, etc., and they want to try and deal with it. But it's not fully overtaking their lives, then the risk of suicide might be less. So that would be a question that would need to be discussed with the appropriate medical professionals. And then he has a very interesting source for making this assertion. He says a precedent for this line of reasoning appears in a response of the Rashba, who addresses the intriguing case of a person who had taken a vow not to laugh. Okay, so they didn't want to encourage me with their jokes, and they took a vow not to laugh. He subsequently developed a severe mental disorder, and it was discovered that when people laughed in his presence and made him laugh, his condition was alleviated. Laughter is, after all, the best form of medicine. The question was asked whether it was permissible to have this patient violate his vow in order to restore his mental functioning. The Rashba asserts there is room to allow laughing in this individual's presence, as this situation involves safek sakana, the risk of death. He writes,
Here, where there is a strong evil spirit, mental dysfunction, he might possibly put himself in danger. And so to settle his mind, we allow this for him. And he quotes from Rav Nissim Mizrahi, addresses the case of a man who experienced periodic bouts of a mental insanity for several days at a time. It was suggested that he be fed a certain non-kosher food, which would cure him. I don't think that's a recognised medical form of treatment nowadays, but the principle still holds true. Rav Mizrahi rules it unequivocally that this person's condition is considered life-threatening, and his treatment therefore overrides all Torah laws. So the first thing to flag up is that certainly in cases of severe OCD, that this could be a life and death condition. We don't look at life and death necessarily in the immediate term. Pikach Nefesh, we sometimes look at a wider picture for it, a more long-term view. And if the long-term view is that this could be a life-threatening condition because of the risk of suicide, then all avenues should be explored to try and deal with the condition. So that's at the extreme end. Now, Rav Osher Weiss, in Chelek Bet, Simon Kuf Lamed Dalad, of Minchat Asher, he addresses the question of a certain Talmid Chacham, who, because of his OCD condition, is having difficulty with tefillah. It's taking him a very long time to daven. He's repeating and repeating and repeating out of a concern that he hasn't said the words correctly. So he wants to know, is it permissible to impose a regime on this person that they don't repeat the tefillah at all, and they say it once, and that's it, and whether they were yotzei or whether they were not yotzei is not important, but they've got to learn to deal with their condition and to overcome their condition. So we're not going to go through the whole teshuva, but we're going to pick up on a few important points which I've marked up. So he says, Nireba zela halacha, dereshit chovato shel ishter la'asot et kol hanidrash al menat limtzor mazor u'marpei l'machalato. First thing he says, it's incumbent on such a person to do everything they can to try and overcome their condition, to try and heal themselves, to try and be cured. And therefore, they're even allowed to transgress mitzvot in the Torah. Now, he'll go on to discuss whether it only means not fulfilling positive mitzvot, or it also includes transgressing negative mitzvot. He says, Kvar biyati b'makom acher. He says, I've established elsewhere, derashai ha'adam levatel mitzvot aseh, persons allowed not to do a positive mitzvah to make sure they don't become ill. So, I mean, this would be a relevant point to discuss, you know, currently. I mean, but Ezrat Hashem, we are towards the end of the pandemic, right? But, a year ago, some months ago, you know, even if people didn't think that they were necessarily going to be hospitalized as a result of getting COVID, a person thinks that by going to shul they might get COVID, so then they're allowed not to go to shul because you don't have to become ill in order to do a mitzvah. Obviously, everything has to be, you know, weighed up by, likelihoods and such things. You know, you could say, it's dangerous to cross the road, so therefore I won't go to shul because it's dangerous to cross the road and I don't have to do a mitzvah if I'm putting my life in danger. But the chances of getting knocked down, you know, when you cross the road, if you're careful and it's you're not trying to cross the M1, are fairly small. But, you know, I think the case where he discusses this is a person who's ill if they eat matzah. You know, a person who's got celiac disease. They get ill if they eat matzah. Do they have a chiyuv to eat matzah? A person who has an allergic reaction to wine and grape juice. Do they have to drink the arba kosot? So his conclusion is they don't have to make themselves ill. Where does he get that from? De impato humilvazbez hon rav ala mitzvot. We've got a principle that a person never needs to spend more than 20% of their capital to fulfill a mitzvah. Okay? Let's say a person's got no tefillin, and they're in a place where they can't borrow tefillin from somebody, and they the only way they can get tefillin is by spending 25% of their money. They're exempt from laying tefillin. They don't have to do that. You don't have to spend exorbitant amounts of money on fulfilling mitzvot. That shouldn't be taken as a heter for people to stop paying the prices of all sorts of Jewish things. But the principle is you don't have to spend an enormous amount of money on doing a mitzvah. If you don't have to spend an enormous amount of money on doing a mitzvah, Kal Vachomer, he says, you don't have to make yourself ill doing a mitzvah. So that's the first observation that that he makes. So that's as far as doing a mitzvah. If a person, if carrying on doing the mitzvah like this is going to make a person remain OCD, that they have OCD, so then a person doesn't have to do the mitzvah. If the way that they will recover from their illness, from their condition, is by not doing the mitzvah, then they don't need to do the mitzvah. So if the way that a person can recover from or overcome their OCD is by not saying the Shema more than once, is by not taking more than 1 minute over Netilat Yadayim, so then that's fine. Even if they end up not fulfilling the mitzvah properly, they only manage to wash one hand because they never got to the second hand, that's fine. They stopped for washing their hand because it's in order to stop them being ill with OCD that they're not fulfilling that mitzvah. There's of course a question whether Netilat Yadayim is a positive mitzvah or whether it's just a negative mitzvah that you're not allowed to eat the bread without doing Netilat Yadayim, but that's a different shit. What about transgressing a mitzvah? Are you allowed to? What about the case of the kashrut? Are you allowed to, you know, limit the person to asking one kashrut shaila a day, and everything else he has to eat, whether he's got a safek or not got a safek, you know, he has to eat it. Or a person who's obsessive about, you know, checking their lettuce. All right, do they, you know, you check the lettuce, you spend, you know, 1 minute on each leaf, and then you have to move on. You can't spend more than 1 minute on each leaf, and even if there's a bug there, you know, too bad, and you'll eat the bug. Can you say that to the person? So he comes to the conclusion that you can even say, you can even do that. Why does he reach such a conclusion? So he says this in the area marked bet. He says, because that's Amrinan Mutav Sheyichalel Shabbat Achat, V'lo Yichalel Shabbatot Harbe. So we've got a principle, this is Gemara in Masechet Yoma, which is talking about the mitzvah Pikuach Nefesh. And the question of, can you break Shabbat for Pikuach Nefesh? And the Gemara, one of the reasons that the Gemara gives why you can, is a principle of, it's better that a person should break one Shabbat, so they're going to be able to break, to observe many Shabbatot in the future. In terms of, if a person's desperately ill, the only way you can save them is by breaking Shabbat now. Well, if I don't break Shabbat now, I'll be keeping this Shabbat, but all the future Shabbatot that this person can observe, they won't be able to observe. So therefore, you're allowed to break Shabbat, because it's giving them the potential to observe many more Shabbatot properly in the future. He says the same is true here. A person who's suffering from OCD isn't able to fulfill mitzvot properly, and by treating the OCD, even if it involves transgressing a mitzvah, nevertheless, if you look at the long-term view, you're enabling them to better fulfill mitzvot in the future, and therefore it's going to be permissible. And he brings a number of proofs for that position. That's essentially what he says there. So he said, in terms of not doing positive mitzvot, he said, yeah, you don't need to make yourself ill to do a mitzvah, because you don't need to spend an exorbitant amount of money on doing a mitzvah, so you don't need to make yourself ill. And as far as even potentially transgressing negatives, seeing as it's going to enable you to properly fulfill mitzvot in the future, you're allowed, if necessary, even to transgress negatives. Then on the next page, he says that he found this this letter of the Stipler, who says, yeah, definitely, as far as brachot is concerned, you know, if that's the trouble that the person has got, you say he says the bracha once, mustn't repeat it under any circumstances, because the condition has to be treated. And he goes on and says, the person in question that he's dealing with particularly here, this Talmid Chacham, wondered if maybe, seeing as he's not allowed to repeat, you know, the benching if he gets it wrong, so maybe he shouldn't, eat bread. And that way he won't have to bench, because eating bread, gives you a chiyuv, bench, pirkat hamazon is a chiyuv d'oraita. It's a mitzvah within HaTorah. If you just eat chicken schnitzels, so borei nefashot isn't a chiyuv midoraita. So therefore, maybe it's better just to eat things which you won't have to say full benching over. And he gives a very perceptive answer. He says, don't even think of going down that road, because, you know, once you go down that road, you'll always find something that better you shouldn't do, so that you don't get into that question. So why don't you say, I'm not going to eat bread, but then you say, oh, well, anything to take, maybe I should eat it very slowly so I never eat a kazayit in enough time that I'm going to need to say a brach achrona, etc., etc., etc. A person with OCD is always going to find something to be obsessive about. And therefore, he says, you know, just follow the guidance of the psychotherapist, and do it that way. Don't try to look for clever answers. And then in his final paragraph, again, makes some very sensitive comments. He's talking about, you know, what should this person do? Because the person very often, you know, maybe he's not fulfilling the mitzvot properly. So what should he do about Kiddush? Kiddush Friday night, he needs to make Kiddush. This person makes Kiddush on behalf of his family. If he's not saying the words properly, okay, he's not allowed to go back and repeat them. But he's not fulfilling the mitzvah. Okay, he doesn't have to fulfill the mitzvah. Reb Osher Weiss has given him a p'tor from the mitzvah because he's got OCD. But what about the person's family? Well, they need to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush. So he says, yeah, that's true. So the person's wife should make Kiddush. That's the solution. Let his wife make Kiddush, or his children make Kiddush, or somebody else make Kiddush. What if you've got visitors round the table? What are you going to do then? So he says in his final paragraph, as he says, you need to be ashamed about, and it's like any other illness. And just if you had a wooden leg, you wouldn't be ashamed of it. So you don't need to be ashamed about this either. And you explain to your guests that you'd like them to make Kiddush because you're trying to deal with your OCD, and nothing to be ashamed of. And, you know, this is also a very important observation, because as we know, mental health issues in the world as a whole are a taboo subject, becoming less so, but certainly a taboo subject. And certainly in the Frum community, they're a taboo subject. And I think Rav Osher Weiss's comments there are very, very powerful. So his guidance, I think, is invaluable and very, very empowering for a person who's trying to overcome a condition of OCD. What I will add to the equation is an observation that I think wherever possible with regard to OCD specifically, but with regard to mental health disorders in general, if possible, it's I think very valuable and very important to have a therapist who's if not a Frum Jew themselves, but is at least sensitive to the religious needs of a Frum person. Sometimes that person might not be available. So sometimes you might not be able to find a therapist who specialises in, you know, whatever condition a person has got that ticks those boxes. But in an ideal world, that's what a person should be looking for, because, you know, in this in this context, there needs to be an understanding, for example, of, you know, how you know, necessary is it to allow mitzvot to be broken? Not necessarily the various importance of mitzvot, different types of mitzvot, you know, in terms of, say, areas of Tarat HaMishpacha, which is a much more serious issue halachically than, you know, saying brachot. So, you know, it needs to be, you know, the guidance, you know, ideally needs to be appropriate for a Jew. Within the context, of course, of always looking to treat the condition and not to take any shortcuts, to do what's necessary, but to have a clear understanding of what's necessary. And this is also true, you know, as I say, with regard to other mental health conditions as well. You know, that if possible, I think the at the same time, it's important to stress that one should always go to the best practitioner. Priority should always given to the best practitioner. But where you've got a choice between equally good practitioners, and one of them is sensitive to the needs of a frum person, so I think it's always going to be more successful and more appropriate to go to that person. So as I've said in previous shiurim, this might have touched a raw nerve with some people. If it has done, and there's anything anybody wants to follow up on, then obviously please feel free to be in touch with me offline. And any support that I can give, I will of course be very happy to do so. And you know, like many other mental health conditions, this is sometimes something that we can be a bit blasé about, a bit flippant about. Sometimes, you'll joke about, a person being OCD. And, you know, sometimes it's just a joke, but sometimes those comments, you know, if the person is suffering from OCD, sometimes those comments can be very, very hurtful and painful. So just a reminder that we should all be, you know, cautious and careful in that regard as well. So that brings tonight's share to an end. And next week we have a